online at restoreoftheheartland.com.
And Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggins with us today. And we didn't think to ask you about the USAA meeting in Washington, D.C. I know you were there. We talked about it beforehand.
Well, it was a great event. You know, it's where the Army kind of, you know, does a show and tell. They bring in all their equipment. They have leaders of the Army talk about future initiatives, the azimuth the Army's moving out in, what type of issues, challenging issues that they're facing and they're trying to solve. And then there's corporate members that come in as well from the Department of Defense or from the defense industry that are represented. And I will tell you, this particular Central Flint Hills was represented very well there.
We talked to City Manager Ron Fear. I know the mayor was there. Just a lot of people from our area were there. Lyle Butler, Chamber of Commerce.
Absolutely. You know, this is everybody's excited about MBATH, and they should be, because it really is something coming to the this region. But as well, what a great region with the elements that we have in place to bring defense industry to here. You have a major university. You have a military installation. You have the intellectual capital for really the Army at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, about 2 hours away. And you got I-70 and I-35 that really create great arteries and a rail hub here that these industries are looking at. So I think the community's being there, talking to these individuals, talking about the merits of this particular region, went over really big.
We do have a phone call.
Perfect.
Welcome to In Focus. Go ahead, please.
I must receive three or four requests for contributions from various military groups, disabled veterans, wounded warriors, all that. Which ones do you believe are the best run and would be the best bang for the buck?
Kind of a different question.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people right now on the edge of their seats. You know, it really becomes a thing of the heart, and there's a lot of great organizations out there. Wounded Warrior, a lot of those that support the Wounded Warriors are great programs because they still need our help. There's the USO that's got some great programs for our transitioning soldiers called the Pathfinder Program. So I would tell you that if you get an opportunity every year, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, there's the Combined Federal Funds Campaign, and they put out a document that they give out to individuals that has every one of the organizations that you can give money to and donate to. And in there it talks about how much of that percentage of your dollar goes toward the actual organization, how much goes to administration. It's a great document, not a lot of people know about. It has all those particular organizations that go toward veterans and military organizations. I recommend that that you reach out, probably contact the United Way, who's a big part of the CFC, the Combined Federal Funds Campaign, and see if you can get a copy of that particular document. It might help you steer you in the direction that you might want to go and what organizations you might want to contribute to.
Excellent.
And thanks for the question.
I learned something new just then, so that I appreciate that. 537-1350. I always do like those questions. I think of things that I might not necessarily think of.
Great question. Great question.
I know that we had talked before about some of the other things that our soldiers do, and Puerto Rico, you say there's still a presence there. I know we talked about this last time, but it's still ongoing.
You know, a lot of people have forgotten about Harvey already and a number of the hurricanes that hit. We still have soldiers in Puerto Rico that are working on improving the lives of the Puerto Ricans. We're not out of the intense weather, season now. So we always got to be prepared. We always got to be careful. But we do have soldiers that do domestic type of operations. Puerto Rico, of course, is one of those in places that got struck extremely hard. They work with USAID, and they provide relief and construction. A lot of engineers there right now working. But, we've got soldiers dispersed. They backed out of Florida. You know, the soldier's job is to basically stem the pain level and get after those things that need to be done, and then they hand it over to the civilians who are really the experts in completing those types of missions.
Very good. And, of course, Afghanistan, I mean, going to the other side of the globe, things continue to be pretty rough over there and increased presence there, too.
Well, I think the events in New York just recently highlight the fact that we're still in a battle. You know, we're still in a war. And so, you know, standing on point, we want to take these guys on thousands of miles away from here. And unfortunately, that's necessary. Having soldiers out there carrying their weapons and guarding the freedoms that we hold dear is absolutely one of the most important missions that soldiers have, and they understand that. So we're talking, and as you're probably reading, about different strategies and putting additional soldiers in some of these places. It's important for us to stay on top of that and realize that it impacts our state, it impacts the militaries that reside in our states, and it really impacts our nation as a whole.
You know, really, as you were talking, too, and I was thinking about the way things are being handled in other parts of the world, and terrorism is such a hard thing to get your hands around, it, exactly where it is and how to attack it. Our job, I think, as a military, you know, has changed.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so much, it's evolved technologically, drones, you name it, but I mean, it's really changed and continues to change.
It does, and it's been that way throughout history. I mean, when you look at Vietnam, and how we battled, went from World War II, Korea, and then into Vietnam. Those that fought the Vietnam War, I will tell you, we're using a lot of the counterinsurgency techniques that they developed in Vietnam today in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, it's amazing. But the enemy adapts, and the enemy figures out how to defeat our measures that we put in place. So we constantly have to be working hard to be ahead of their decision-making process.
Any more talk about BRAC, base realignment and closure? And I know that there's the budget, you're always working on that. Just what are you hearing out of Washington, D.C. right now?
Well, thanks for that question. That's a big part of my portfolio. And to be honest with you, there's some people out there that are still pushing for BRAC very hard. They think that if they can close down installations, they can apply those dollars to readiness in other places. And then there's folks on there that says, hey, listen, you know, we've got all this stuff going on in the world. Our soldiers are busy, busier than ever before. We need to stop the downsizing. We need to increase the formation. And if you increase the numbers, then we need to maintain those installations, that infrastructure to house and train. And I will tell you, so I don't, my opinion, and it's only an opinion, is I think BRAC right now is in the box. But I'll tell you, in the future, we always got to keep a warding eye on that, because I think that box could open, primarily because there's folks out there that continue to beat the drum saying we've got too much infrastructure, which we might, and that we need to make sure that we close that to apply those dollars somewhere else.
We want to remind listeners, we have about four more minutes, 537-1350, if you have any last-minute phone calls. You have a pretty good relationship with the local congressional delegation, I'm guessing, when it comes to some of these issues, BRAC, and you know, other things having to do with the military.
Absolutely. You know, we in Kansas are in good stead with our legislators. They understand the importance of the military for the state of Kansas. I tell people all the time, there's 41,000 Department of Defense employees operating within the borders of Kansas. And it's about a $7 to $9 billion economic impact to the state. That's significant. And it's great to have individuals that work for Kansas and Kansans that understand and advocate every day for our military. And for me, it makes my job easy. But, we've got some great individuals out there that row every day to protect our soldiers, protect their families, and provide for them.
Now, when you were talking, of course, about BRAC just a few minutes ago, too, I almost got the feeling there's nothing set yet. I mean, is it a little bit on the back burner right now, more so than it might have been in other years?
I think so. I primarily think so because, you know, the president has said that he wants to build a strong military. We've got infrastructure that's starting to increase. The budget that's now in place looks like it may accommodate 5,000 active, 5,000 National Guard, 500 National Guard, 500 Reserve. Well, that's an increase. And then over the next 3 years, it'll continually increase. So I think people are looking at it toward an eye of, let's just see where it kind of goes before we start shuttering all this infrastructure or closing it down and then having to go back in and open it back up, which is very expensive.
What's that mean for Kansas? And I know the last BRAC, there were some that were impacted in our state.
Absolutely. You know, for Kansas, what we're trying to do is we're trying to grow. We lost a brigade combat team, and it happened under the radar scope. It happened without a BRAC. And people look and they go, well, you know, how does that happen? Well, the Army was downsizing. It's called sequestration. And so we lost a brigade. About 2,700 soldiers departed the force, which was an impact to these communities that surround Fort Riley. What we're trying to do now is, if the Army's going to increase by a brigade, we'd like that brigade to come home to the central Flint Hills and to Fort Riley.
And your point's well made, because I think that did kind of slip under the radar. It just sort of happened gradually. And we always hear people coming and going in different brigades. And I think the general public gets confused maybe sometimes about what the status is of those brigades at, you know, Fort Riley or wherever the case may be.
That's absolutely right, Kathy. I mean, you know, the bottom line for me is it's my job to make sure that the leadership, specifically the legislators and others here, are aware of some of those things that are happening, and we get out in front of those. Because what we don't want is for people to be caught flat-footed. It really does impact economically those people that have businesses here in these areas, real estate, and we got to make sure that we're protecting them. And at least they're in the process and they know that we're paddling really hard.
We've covered a lot of territory. Anything else real quickly you want to add before Veterans Day, of course?
I would say if you have a veteran or you had a veteran in your family throughout your lives, go and represent them at these parades and recognize these great Americans, because they deserve it.
Thanks again to Perry Wiggins, Executive Director, Governor's Military Council. You've been listening to In Focus.
Coming up tomorrow on K-Man's In Focus, 4-H agent John Jobe will be joining us. Also, Jared Trembley from the Flint Hills Metropolitan Planning Organization, Christina Nolte with Home Care and Hospice, and K-State Student Body President Jack Ayers. Clark Howard, Rush, and Dan Patrick all on the way at K-Man.
When it comes to shopping, there's no place like home. That's why your local Carpet One of Manhattan encourages you to keep your business in the community. KMAN, Manhattan.